Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
One. It hasn't been raining in the last couple of months, but it's time for the change in the season. All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. This is episode 7. I am your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and Tommy Alexander is here with me. Tommy, what's going on?
Not much, man. Summer league's almost over, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. Excited for the season to start soon. About a week yeah. From today, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it kind of felt like the NBA season kind of crept up on us really quickly, but I don't know, for some reason, summer league has made it feel extremely long all of a sudden, and it's taken forever to conclude. You know, we haven't had quite a long gap between, you know, our last episode, which, you know, was pretty well received by you, the fans, discussion wise, our draft talk with Ed Isaacson. So we appreciate everybody listening to that podcast and kind of discussing it and everything. So we're back today. And Tommy, what is the significance of today? Because likely the people who are listening to this podcast right now will realize that it's October 21st, 2015. What's going on today?
Well, October 21st, 2015, for all the nerds out there like me who are super into Back to the Future, is the day that Marty McFly and Doc travel forward in time and Back to the Future too. You know, part of the plot in that movie is that when they go forward in time, they acquire Gray's Sports Almanac, which has all the scores and, you know, stats and everything for the last 25 years. And so on that note, we thought it could be fun to predict the future, I guess, in a way, with regards to some of the stats of some of our guys this season.
For sure. So today we will try and be the Gray Sports Almanac and see how well we can predict the future and project into some of the stats based off of what we've seen so far from preseason. But before we get to that, let's go through some, we'll do some quick hitting notes on recent news because, you know, apparently, at least on Lakers Twitter, a bombshell hit today with regards to Lakers news. So we're going to go through that and also kind of recap the last two preseason games against, I think it was the Golden State Warriors on Saturday. And then on Monday, we played the Blazers.
That's right.
The infamous Ryan Kelly game. So yeah, we'll recap those two quickly, and then we'll go into our main segment, which will be the Back to the Future, you know, future projections. I think I'm going to call this episode Tariq Black to the Future, because apparently he's going to make the roster now.
Yeah, right.
Which is a perfect which is a perfect segue into the big news of today, the Upshaw upcut. Today, you know, we found out that Michael Frazier and Robert Upshaw got cut. And, you know, I guess it was kind of shocking to me just a little bit. But, you know, I could think Eric Pincus hinted at it a day or two earlier that he kind of sensed that things started to shift with regards to maybe Upshaw not making the team, even though initially he thought that Upshaw was going to make it and Sacre was going to be the one to get cut. Any thoughts, Tommy?
So when I heard the news, I was pretty bummed out. I know Upshaw didn't play a ton this preseason, but in the minutes he was out there, to me, he clearly looked better than Robert Sacre. And I know that's not saying a lot because Robert Sacre is just so below average. But, you know, Upshaw is obviously less experienced than Sacre. He's younger than Sacre. He's more athletic than Sacre. All his measurables are better than Sacre. He seems more offensively gifted even at this stage. His instincts are pretty good. I'm talking about Upshaw defensively. I didn't think he was ready to be the number two center on any team, but I thought he was worth giving a guaranteed deal to just because if you throw him into the summer league, you risk other teams looking at this 7 foot, what is he, like seven? He's at least 7 feet with like a 7'6" wingspan or something.
Yeah.
He's just out there in the wild now. And any team with one extra spot who doesn't care, who's going to ship their 15th man to the D League anyway, can just give him that spot. And I just, I know Sakurai was a guaranteed contract, but he was like getting paid, I think, around $1 million this year. And with the comments Mitch made before the preseason or before training camp even, I thought that that was a huge indicator that Sakurai was likely going to get cut and we were going to replace him as we replace him with Upshaw as our third string center.
Yeah. And, you know, I think out of today's news, the one thing that we can glean from everything, you know, I don't want to delve too much into speculation on what Upshaw did like some other people are doing. I can only kind of go off of what Pincus has hinted on Twitter based off his conversations with people. And, you know, from what Pincus said, you know, he kind of said it's nothing outlandish with regards to what Upshaw did. It's just the front office didn't see enough of what they wanted to really commit to him this early on in the process. You know, to you know, pretty much quote Pincus, he said, "Regarding Upshaw, my understanding is issues arose that concern Lakers that go beyond talent. Nothing outrageous, but enough to say no." Yeah, so I mean, pretty much, I don't want to go, I'm not sure what that means, but I saw another interaction between Pincus and a random Twitter follower, and he kind of was like, is this pretty much Upshaw not being pretty much being late to the train with regards to how coming into practice? Was he a little slow? Was he coming in late? Was he tardy? And Pincus kind of said, you know, that's a little closer to the issue, but he wouldn't go deeper into it. So it doesn't sound like it's something totally, totally outrageous. It just sounds like I don't think he fixed pretty much everything that the Lakers wanted him to fix. I'm not saying that's definitively what it is, but at least from what Pincus is saying, it doesn't sound too crazy from how he was, you know, in Summer League, which was probably a worse situation. So I think he's made enough strides. It's just the Lakers didn't see enough of what they wanted to see from him in terms of improvement. Maybe for Upshaw, the bar was just is not the same bar that the Lakers had for him. Maybe he was just like, all right, I already passed the conditioning thing and, you know, I played it pretty cool. Maybe that's all I need to do, you know? But I think maybe the Lakers were expecting him to kind of go above and beyond that, you know, and really, you know, just show that he really, really wanted to be, to make the team. And I don't think Upshaw had the same level of commitment that the Lakers expected from him, essentially.
So I guess I get all of that, but I think the Lakers knew coming into this that Robert Upshaw has he barely played in college because of his issues. I think they knew he wasn't NBA ready. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't the point. He was supposed to not be like a rotation player this year. There's a reason he was passed up by so many teams, like pretty much every team. And by many teams passed up more than one time. Like, I think the Sixers had like 5 second round picks or something. Right. And they didn't use, and they're like a team that loves to stack, you know, talented players, even if they don't need them. So, and they passed all 5 times on Upshaw, you know, so.
Yeah, that's very telling.
So, I don't know. I don't get that they didn't know that this is what he was going to be. I mean, I don't know if they're trying to, like, send him a message or, like, test him, but I feel like it's a delicate balancing act. At the same time, on the one hand, you want to test this guy and make sure that he's, like, mentally there, put him through some trials and tribulations and see how he responds, because he has not responded well in the past. I get that. Yeah. But on the other hand, the second he gets on that D-League team, if he plays a couple good games, some other team's going to snatch him up. We have no rights over him. You know, I think right. With these D-League affiliates, a lot of people forget that it's not like, oh, we're sending him down to the Defenders like it's our AAA team or something like baseball. But that's not how it works. Like, we can send our own guys on our roster who are guaranteed contracts to the Defenders for sure. But guys who are on the Defenders – but we don't have a guaranteed contract with them, we have no claim to them over anyone else. And if Upshaw's not happy with how things went with us, he could easily sign a contract in 2 weeks with some other NBA team. So,
right. So let's just get, you know, our actual feelings out of the way. I was pretty bummed, and I think you said you were bummed as well. But, you know, like I wasn't going to put up a front and say, you know, the Lakers just, this isn't an indictment on the Lakers front office. But at the same time, I think some people on Twitter were kind of saying that Upshaw really hasn't shown much. And so this isn't loss. No. And I am not in agreement with any of that whatsoever. I'm not sure what people are watching, but I've seen enough just from, you know, Summer League and preseason to know that, all right, let's get at his weaknesses and deficiencies out of the way. He's always out of position on defense. All right, we know that. He's young, though, and this is his first basketball that he's playing in like almost a year, pretty much.
Right.
You know, he jumps too much when he's playing defense. That's another weakness. You know, he kind of jumps in the air too much. That's fine. But to be honest, like, his bone-crushing screens, the way that he knows how to screen for a guy and free up his man, mainly D'Angelo, and you've seen that even in Summer League when he was out of condition and he was still setting those crazy screens, and that's not a moving screen, it's like a mountain screen
really
that Upshaw
shot,
sets.
Yeah.
I mean, just that alone is warrant enough for him to, you know, get a shot on the team. So for anybody that's saying this guy hasn't really shown anything, and Sakre, we already know what he can do. You're right. We already know what he can do. Yeah. Exactly. He can, which is not much, you know. Upshaw, at least, he frees up guys on the pick and roll to hit that jump shot, especially Russell, who, you know, Ed Isaacson said his biggest problem is he's going to need to create space. And a guy like Upshaw can create space just by setting those screens. And that's not even including what we've seen from him offensively in terms of the guy's got a legit jump shot. He has got actual post moves, and he can use that jump shot in the post. And then just based on how well he's looked from summer league to preseason in terms of conditioning and how much more athletic he looks in terms of getting up and down the floor and then actually jumping and contesting shots. I mean, it's night and day. And you know, that was enough for me to see, yeah, does this guy have potential? Sure. And he's shown it. You know, it's not a matter of this guy hasn't shown enough and you add in the character issues and it's like a no-brainer. We shouldn't keep him. So I think we're both pretty disappointed. Obviously, we don't know what was said behind closed doors to him. I think both of us are hoping that it was kind of an amicable kind of right. waving. And the Lakers were just like, hey, you know, this is just a momentary roadblock. We anticipate having some roster shuffles or roster moves or people getting injured down the line. We'd like you to sign with the D League first with the Defenders. And hopefully we can revisit this in December or something. So yep. It might have been as amicable as that. You know, Pincus doesn't make it seem that way, but who knows what's really going on. So
right.
You know, hopefully this isn't the end of the road for him. I think it's just very clear that he has some, the Lakers want him to spend a little more time maturing. So, and then, you know, quickly on Michael Frazier, you know, I was very encouraged by this one quote. You know, Byron Scott said Michael Frazier, after getting cut, immediately said, you know, what else can I do? And, you know, he just expressed that desire to, you know, want to make the team. And I think that's the kind of desire and commitment the Lakers want to see from Upshaw, you know,
right.
What Michael Frazier just showed there. So I have no doubt that, you know, I think Michael Frazier is going to sign with the Defenders, and we'll see him down the line, hopefully, if there are some injuries that come up. So with that said, with the Upshaw stuff, I guess the only other quick hitting news in Lakerland is that Lamar Odom is back in LA at Cedars-Sinai, and he's doing well. He's responding well. It's awesome to see LO recovering well. So, you know, more prayers to him and everything. So get well soon. Let's move on to just, I guess, quick preseason recap on the last two games. The one in SD where it was kind of cut short in third quarter, and then the Ryan Kelly Show, the last game at Staples against the Portland Trailblazers. Tommy, what's your overall thoughts of the last two games, and anyone you want to kind of bring up quickly or highlight?
So in general, I thought the last two games, maybe not the Golden State game so much. No, really both of them. I thought those were really what normal preseason games are. I don't, you know, the guys on Time Warner Cable Sports, and that especially Stu, have, you know, been making these comments about how it's been super weird this preseason for the Lakers for whatever reason. Like, I don't know if the training, if the coaching staff has some weird new philosophies or what, but we've been playing like, we played a game where only 10 guys played, which I think is, you know, with the kind of roster we have, is going to be even pretty rare for the regular season. We played, you know, a bunch of games where several games where Upshaw didn't play at all. We played games like several games where Frazier didn't really play, several games where Jonathan Holmes didn't really play. Typically in the preseason, these are the guys you're trying to see. On the one hand, I thought that they were, you know, very normal preseason games. On the other hand, I thought we looked a lot better. And I think a large part of that is due to the emergence of Marcelo Huertas. He finally was able to play, and when he came in, our bench just looked like better than our starters even. And our bench is a bunch of no-name guys. Besides, Lou Williams didn't even play the last two games, but, you know, besides Swaggy P, we were playing pretty much Marcelo Huertas, who hasn't played in the NBA himself, and a bunch of Jabari Brown, Nick Young, Larry Nance, / Bass a little bit, and then Tarik and Sakre, and Marcelo was just making these guys look like legit NBA players. And yeah, we were playing against scrubs, but look, we talked about this earlier in an earlier podcast, and we said when it's scrubs on scrubs, your offense and like what your system and your coaching really shows through. And so, yeah, it was scrubs on scrubs, but our scrubs won. You know what I mean? And like,
yeah.
At least we know that we can throw. And, you know, we're not even going to throw a lineup that bad out probably in the regular season with that many, right. Like all exclusively bench players all out there at once. So I was pretty encouraged, to be fully honest with you. I mean, I'm not sure if anything really changed in like the scheme or if it was just where it just came in and made everyone look better. But I really like the way that they look. So
I mean, Huertas had 6 assists the first game, 8 assists the next game, and between those two games, he only had 2 turnovers, 1 per game.
Yeah.
So he had a 7, 14 to 2 assist to turnover ratio, which
Insane.
Is like amazing.
Insane, yeah.
I think, like you were saying, it was kind of night and day when he came into the game on both occasions. You could just see that veteran savviness just like eking out of him in terms of just how quick, and I think we talked about this earlier. It's not even, we were kind of like, man, Marcelo looks a lot quicker than D'Angelo. But I think we also came to the conclusion that maybe it's not even so much quickness, actual agility and, athleticism. It's just the dude knows where he wants to go on the floor at all times once he gets a screen,
Yeah.
It's like his decisiveness and his instincts are like on point in terms of where he wants to go and just how he knows how to pretty much manipulate where the pick and roll is going, how the defenders are playing him. And he knows exactly, I think there was that one play last night where two defenders were coming at him and he could sense that defenders were coming at him. So he like did a, reverse spin move away from the screen and away from the defenders and, was able to find his guy. Just in terms of his veteran savviness, he looked very, very solid. He pretty much looks like how I guess we wanted Steve Nash to look like, I guess just minus Steve Nash's ability to take over the offense in terms of mid-range jump shots and three-point shooting.
Right.
Outside of that, in terms of how he runs the team, it's very Steve Nash-like. And I guess he has that one, Steve Nash one-legged bank jump shot thing in his arsenal as well.
And that one-legged running jumper is, like, surprisingly effective. You know what I mean? Like,
I know, right?
His shooting stats, like, you can look them up online. His shooting stats were not very good in the Euro leagues. And he is much better offensively than I expected. I mean, I knew he'd be able to pass. I knew he was a floor general. I mean, to be honest, even that's better than I expected. But
yeah,
his shooting is way better than I expected.
You know what I think it is, too? I think it's like, he's adjusting to the NBA, but I think the NBA is adjusting to him as well, to the point where I think he's going to find himself a lot more open than he expected, because these guys are like, whoa, this guy's whipping passes like everywhere. We kind of have to defend all around this guy. So I think he might even find himself more open just in terms of these guys don't know who he is, first of all.
Right.
And then once he sees him like distributing all over the place, they might start playing the pass more and he'll find himself a lot more open. This guy, and just to be clear, in terms of if people are thinking about, can we trade this guy? I check with Pincus, by December 15th, we can trade him. But at this point, Huertas looks like a guy I think we want to have for the long term in terms of the next 2-3 years as that veteran, stable veteran, bench point guard.
Definitely.
Because he looks like he belongs on the Spurs, doesn't he?
Oh, I put out a huge disclaimer when I said this, but if you go back and listen to our I think it was like our first podcast or something when we're talking about these guys, I compared him to Ginobili.
Ginobili.
He's like a point guard sort of Ginobili in the sense that he just sees guys, you know what I mean? And he does play like a Spurs player. He's very, very, very fun to watch. So I'm pretty happy
for
with
sure.
it.
Yeah, I'm very encouraged by that, by him. He's like both flashy and very solid at the same time. It doesn't really make that much sense. I expect his turnover rate to kind of rise, but so far, if he can keep this like flashiness and kind of dynamic play along with the low turnovers, it's like a win-win for us. And I think it's going to benefit D'Angelo as well. And I think we've seen it from some of D'Angelo's interviews, just how much he's, soaking up from Huertas and how much of a, I guess, leader Huertas is, despite the fact that he's the first time he's in the NBA and he's a rookie. So let's transition from Huerta's greatness to, I guess, how D'Angelo looks in comparison and just what you've seen from D'Angelo the last two games, I guess.
Yeah, so in the Golden State game, we didn't get to see a ton because that game got cut short. I thought he didn't look that great, to be honest, to me in that game, which is going to, he's a rookie, he's 19. Get ready for a long season of this. You know what I mean? Yeah. One game he's going to look like he's the best rookie in the entire class. The next game, he's going to look like he belongs in, barely in the D leagues. You just got to look like you got to sort of weed through that stuff and just think about, just look for like signs. And I thought in the last game, he looked a lot better. He came in the beginning, he started out with the starters and he didn't do a whole lot. And then he came in against Portland's deep bench unit. And in the last 6 minutes of the game, he just came in with this mindset, like, I'm going to get mine and I'm going to play and I'm going to just do, I'm not going to worry about the offense. I'm not going to worry about slowing it down so we can run through all of our sets, like down to a T. I'm just going to play basketball. And I thought he looked a lot better, like shooting wise and scoring wise. He's a way, 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 way ahead of his passing and offensive vision right now.
Yeah, I think right now he's still trying to find that perfect balance, because if you look at all of his stats in the games that he's played, you know, he'll have a high assist game, but the scoring won't be there, and then the next game the scoring will be there, but the assists won't be there, you know. I feel like he's still trying to balance out like how to play this in terms of maybe he just needs to be aggressive from the get-go, whether it's scoring or passing and looking to get space. And I think it'll start from his scoring, because you know, he needs to attack the defenders more when he gets those screens and put the onus on them to kind of defend him, which is what he did in the fourth quarter of the last game, in terms of he was starting to get kind of shifty with and crafty with his handles and kind of get the guys on their heels, and then that's when he was able to create some space, you know, and pull up for that jump shot, which he was able to hit. And I think you and I both said it, you know, this guy can shoot, you know, it's just a matter of him kind of seeing the ball go in the basket and kind of getting a rhythm. And you know, if he's not looking to score, and he's looking to kind of just feel the offense out a little too much, that's when the defenders kind of close in on him. And I think something that was, you know, I saw some interesting Twitter debates regarding D'Angelo, and some of the issues that people had with him was that, you know, too often he's too tentative with his dribble and the ball.
Yes.
And instead of attacking it, he'll just kind of wait for defenders to come at him for some reason.
Exactly. This is okay. And again, this is another thing I think I said maybe in our second podcast. It's like I'm having all these flashbacks now, but I guess it's appropriate with Back to the Future. But in the Utah game, it sort of felt like D'Angelo was dribbling into the pressure a lot. He was Neto or whoever they were using in those games. They were pressing 80 feet, and D'Angelo's like he would get like a step on his man and then take a step back. Like it's like he was doing a dribbling drill or something with himself. He, tentative, I think, is the perfect word to describe it. And actually, you and I think we're having this conversation last night, but he looks about a quarter of the speed of Huertas. The thing is, he's not slow. He's not Kyle Anderson, which is kind of what he looks like at times out there. You know, he's like he plays super slow and methodical, but he's just so tentative. And then you look at Huertas, who in a sprint would get his, you know, he would get destroyed by D'Angelo probably, but he looks like you know, we've been talking about Steve Nash. He looks like Steve Nash out there.
Yeah, I mean, like I feel like D'Angelo, it's going to be, you know, a process for sure. He's just feeling it out, but I think that the sooner he realizes that he just needs to attack and be a little more aggressive, the more he'll understand that once I do that, it'll open up not only my scoring but also open up lanes and passing lanes for my teammates, because it doesn't do anyone service when he's kind of too cool, and you know, and I feel like it plays into his personality a little bit, you know, the way he's too kind of, you know, super
Exactly.
calm and collected. You know,
Yeah.
I don't think he can play that way out there, because with regards to the kind of offense we have, if he does that, he just eats up shot clock, and then, you know, we're down to 10 seconds and someone chucking it up, you know. So I
Right.
feel like he just has to be aggressive from the get-go, and pretty much what we saw from in the fourth quarter, the last game, is what we wanted. Him getting the defense on his heels, you know, kind of getting them kind of hypnotized with his dribbling because he's attacking them, and pulling up for a jump shot. And eventually, you know, hopefully, like we've said before, hopefully he adds a burst of speed to that in terms of actually attacking into the lane so that they don't just fall for the jump shot.
Right.
But, you know, right now I'll just take an aggressive mentality for right now. So yeah, I think that those are just some things D'Angelo has to work on. And I think, you know, Huertas will help him in terms of realizing how to read those pick and roll coverages and how the defenders are defending him and whatnot. And, you know, D'Angelo's a better shooter than Huertas, so there's no reason why he can't incorporate the aggressiveness as well as finding those passing lanes. So I think it is going to be a process, and I'm glad that Huertas is there to kind of alleviate this transitional period for him. So,
Oh, definitely. And I think this is going to be, you know, we're seeing why Mitch signed Huertas now. And this is sort of what we suspected. Like, even when Huertas hadn't played any games for us, we both sort of thought he was going to make the team anyway. And now it's like, after seeing him actually play, it's like, okay, well, he's definitely going to make the team. But, you know, easing the transition for D'Angelo is a big one. And also, D'Angelo really needs to pay attention to this guy when, you know, presumably, I think, you know, Thursday is our last preseason game. D'Angelo needs to, like, Huertas is probably going to play a lot because he missed so many games, but D'Angelo needs to, like, really pay attention. Like, I know everyone's talking about Kobe, put his locker next to Kobe, all this and that, but Huertas is a guy he really needs to watch. He's going to be a point guard.
Oh yeah, for sure. I totally agree with that. So yeah, let's kind of move on to some other guys that I guess we want to highlight. I think the main guy that I want to highlight besides D'Angelo and Huertas is Larry Nance Jr. Holy crap.
Oh
I mean,
wow,
you
yeah.
know, he brought down the house in San Diego, obviously, by erasing Festus Ezeli's life. you know, I don't know if I feel like when the Warriors go into contract negotiations with Festus Ezeli, all they're going to show him is that Larry Nance poster video on loop.
Definitely.
And, you know, they'll be like, yeah, we're not giving you that money. Just look at this. And Festus is going to have to, you know, kind of just be like, all right, I'll take whatever you can give me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, Larry Nance, the past two games, not, I mean, we already knew he had the athleticism in him, but him working on his jump shot and really showing his jump shot, you know, he hit 2 3-pointers in the last two games and then, you know, several other jump shots besides that. If he can do that a little more consistently, that'll open up his game so much more because of just how athletic he is when he gets a first step on somebody. You know, we saw it in a Golden State game when he turns the corner, and he said it himself, when he turns the corner on someone, nobody's going to beat him in a jumping contest, so he can hammer that down whenever he wants. He just looked really impressive in terms of the versatility he was finally able to show off, and he's looking like a legit rotation player now who's probably going to get 10 to 15 minutes. You know, I didn't think he was going to get any minutes at all, but hey, he's pushing Bass for some of that backup power forward minutes, or maybe he'll play some small forward as well. So your thoughts on Nance?
Okay, so I don't think Larry Nance is going to be a rotation player still, but he's impressing me a lot the more and more I see of him. We watched the draft together, you and I, and when we saw the Larry Nance pick, we were just so confused. We didn't know who he was, and the clip that ESPN showed of Larry was just terrible. It made him look like Mark Madsen or something, you know, like Mark Madsen and Luke Walton combined. And right. We were just like so confused with all the guys that were left on the board. And the more and more we saw of him, I think the more and more we both grew to like him, even before training camp and everything. Like, we saw these explosive clips of him jumping. We saw his numbers he put up defensively. He was like defensive player of the year in his conference or something. And we saw, like, you know, the highlight videos of his workouts where he was like, not saying he's going to be like Aaron Gordon. Obviously, Aaron Gordon's probably going to be a lot better than him. But, you know, the way he dribbles and keeps his dribble low and he can push the ball and he's got a decent handle, it kind of is reminiscent of Aaron Gordon. So I've been really impressed, you know, like I still don't think he's going to consistently take minutes away from Bass.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that we have a future rotation player for sure. Like Bass, like we all have to keep in mind, is only here on a 1 year deal. When he's gone, we have Nance waiting.
For sure. And, you know, I think Larry Nance, I think we were talking about just his weird, how he looks athletically. It's like very normal. It's very mundane almost, or very routine, but that's because it comes so easily to him to jump that high that it almost looks kind of boring. But then when you watch the replay, you're like, oh wait, he got way up off the ground. It's just, he looks so graceful whenever he's jumping that you don't almost see it as such a flashy, like, hammer play the way you'd see like a LeBron poster or DeAndre Jordan poster. Although, you know, the Festus Ezeli poster was just legitimately a poster, but on most of his dunks or putback dunks, it kind of just looks like he's just flying, and then he kind of jams it down softly, so it just looks so effortless to him the way that he jumps that it almost comes off as, you know, underrated. And so that's obviously from his dad's lineage and genes, so it's great to see Larry kind of coming into his own. And I honestly didn't think we'd see flashes like this quickly, so it's good to see that, you know, we at least are seeing flashes of a rotation player, you know, down the road. If he can turn into like a Robert Horry kind of, you know, rotational player that helps out, because I can see him like as a rotational player for a championship team just because of how smart he is, like you said.
Definitely.
He reminds me of Luke Walton in the way that you can kind of just plug him in for energy and he won't kind of hurt your team. Hopefully that's what he kind of turns into. So yeah, Jordan Clarkson has kept up his great play. Do you have anything on Clarkson? I think it's pretty much rote at this point in terms of Clarkson looks great. You know, what else can you kind of say about him?
That's pretty much all you could say. I completely agree.
I think he's going to have a career year, and we'll kind of get to it when we go into the stats projections. Randall still looks amazing. He only played that first quarter, but, you know, he was setting his teammates up and everything. He looks locked and ready to go. It kind of feels like all these guys are locked and ready to go. They kind of feel as restless as we do in terms of, let's get this preseason stuff over with and get on to real games. So
definitely.
So yeah, I think we could move on now to, you know, I guess our main segment tonight, and we'll kind of get into our Back to the Future projections now. So let's get to the stat projections.
Kobe, I love you!
Oh, get out of here, Steve! Get out of here!
All right, so October 21st, Back to the Future. Who do you want to start with?
Let's start with Jordan Clarkson.
Jordan Clarkson, okay. So Clarkson, I think, is going to have a career year just by pure virtue of how much he's worked this summer.
Definitely.
And I think any chance he got this summer to play and improve himself, he took it. I mean, even in terms of like wanting to play for the Philippine national team and just wanting to make that team and contribute right away. I mean, he's been on from pretty much the time the season ended, and it's clearly shown. And, you know, he's on a pretty much a contract year because we have to extend him this next summer. So, and it clearly shows that his mind is in the right place. So for Clarkson, I've got 17 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. So what about you?
That's actually very similar to what I was going to say, because I was going to, you know, I was just sort of looking at similar players to Clarkson, both position wise and like career development wise. And honestly, I was looking at Kobe's career stats, and between his second and third year. So his second year, he averaged 15, his third year, he averaged about 20.
Right.
Rebounds, he was 3 and then 5. Assists, he was 2.5 and then about 4. So I was looking like, I thought Clarkson was going to slip in a little bit like in between those two numbers. Obviously, he's a little bit older than Kobe. I thought that would help account for it. Like, we saw what he could do last year when he got minutes. And in the preseason, he's averaging 13 points a game on 47% shooting. He's shooting 87% from the line, and, you know, he gets the line so much.
Right.
His assists might go down a little bit, but he's very good at rebounding for a guard. He's doing this all in 23 minutes per game playing. So, right. I think the sky's the limit, and 17 is a very conservative estimate, and I think that he'll hit it, and it'll be a very consistent 17.
For sure. Let's move on to Julius Randle. So for Randle, I mean, kind of the same mentality as Clarkson in terms of how motivated he is and driven he is to just prove critics wrong and prove that, you know, the injury-plagued season was just a momentary setback and he's ready to get things rolling. So for Randle, I have pretty much kind of what he's averaging this preseason, you know, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 3.5 assists, which I think will be the biggest thing that'll stand out in terms of his stats, his playmaking. I think that's totally going to translate this season. Hopefully he also gets like a steal and like a 0.7 blocks to show that, you know, some of the defensive awareness and activities there as well. But I'm not so concerned about his defensive stats in terms of raw steals and block stats. I'm just concerned about whether he can keep up his intensity that he's shown in terms of staying in front of his man and kind of hounding guys and also just being mentally aware defensively. So yeah, 16, 8, 3.5. What about you?
Again, very similar. So I'm looking at guys here to just sort of project against our guys.
Yeah.
I know their play style isn't exactly the same, but the one guy I'm always going to internally compare Randle to is Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin in his third year, when he got real teammates, put up and they started clicking, he put up 18, 8, and 4. And I think that's about where I expect. I don't know if Randle's going to put up 4 assists, maybe 3 is, you know, I think you said 3.5, so that's probably a little bit closer to what he's going to get. But I think 18 and 8 is very, very doable for him. Our front court is not as deep as our back court, and Randle is very, very aggressive. So I think 18, and again, efficient 18 points per game is totally within the realm of possibility.
For sure. So let's move on now to Roy Hibbert. So I think Roy Hibbert's going to have just a bounce back resurgent kind of year, not so much in terms of points, but just in terms of how effective and useful he can be for a team where his presence will be positively felt by the team. I think he's shown it this preseason in terms of how active he's looked, how more fluid he looks running, how great he looks on the boards, which is something that I guess, you know, he didn't really show in Indiana just because he was spending so much time having to defend positionally and everything. So for Hibbert, I have 10 points, 10 rebounds, 2.2 blocks, you know, and then him pretty much just anchoring our defense and kind of getting us hopefully from last defensively to middle of the pack to the 20th range. So, and I think that's a huge accomplishment for Roy Hibbert in general. So I think his presence will be more felt intangibly in terms of his effect on our entire team defensively and just chemistry wise. So, and mentoring the younger guys. So what do you have for Hibbert?
So for Hibbert, I actually differ a little bit here because I think Hibbert is like around a 10 point per game average for his career. But I think he's going to have a little bit less here just because we have so many offensive options that he's starting with. So I have him at like 7 or 8 points per game. That being said, I have him with way more rebounds. I mean, in 21 minutes per game in the preseason, he's averaging 8.5 rebounds. And I don't see that going down, you know? So
yeah,
I think he could easily average 10 or 11 rebounds per game, which is going to be crazy for him because I think last year he averaged like 7. And like you said, hopefully the blocks. I don't know. He's not like a big... It's for me, it's more about opponent field goal percentage with him than it is at the rim, than it is how many blocks he gets, because he's not like an explosive leaper. And he's more about positioning and verticality. And, you know, he's a strategic player more than he is like a flashy player. So
for sure,
blocks I can't really project, but I think the rebounds are going to be a huge improvement from his previous output.
For sure. So, you know, us combined, both of our predictions, it's looking at around 7 to 10 points, 10 to 12 rebounds, and, you know, probably he'll maintain his 2 blocks a game or something. So, you know, that's all we could ask out of Hibbert. And just in general, he's looked great this preseason. Let's move on to Kobe Bryant. For Kobe, you know, last year he kind of came out shooting and gunning and everything. And first he started out off shooting and gunning, and then he became more of a playmaker. And all of that came out to having like a 22-point game average. But I think, like we've talked about before, I think he's going to play more like the latter part of what we saw from Kobe last season. So I expect his points to go down. But maybe, you know, his playmaking and just, I guess, in terms of him kind of fading back a little and letting the guys do their thing, I'm hoping that's the kind of Kobe we're going to get. So, you know, for me, and maybe this is a little too optimistic from Kobe, I have him at 18 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists, pretty much. I have a very controlled Kobe out there, almost like a Michael Jordan Kobe. I'm not sure how realistic that is, but I'm guessing those were his averages near the end of the season with way more assists because he was the one kind of playmaking at the end there. But I think in this team, his assists are kind of going to go down. The biggest way he can contribute to the team is kind of fading back a little and letting the guys do their thing. So I have 18, 3, and 3. What do you have?
So very similar again. I mean, with Kobe, I just look at this guy is a career 20 shots per game average guy, and he's not getting 20 shots per game. I mean, he could try to force 20 shots per game, but he's probably not going to get 20 shots per game with this team. The last time he shot 15 shots per game, 15 to 16 shots per game, was in 1998-99 season. And that season, he averaged 20 points per game. And I think 20 is pretty reasonable for his scoring this year.
I think the only difference between those two things in terms of him averaging 20 points a game back in 98 is that he had probably a higher free throw rate in terms of going to the line. I don't think he's going to get to the line as much this season. So I think 18 to 20 points is a reasonable projection. What do you have as a rebounds and assists set?
Rebounds and assists, I mean, just going off the preseason, he's only played 18 minutes a game, but he's put up 1.4 for rebounds and assists. So I think 3 and 3 is very, very reasonable.
For sure. All right, so rounding out the starting lineup, let's go to D'Angelo Russell. So for D'Angelo, you know, like you said, it's going to take some time. It could be very rocky on the outset. I eventually have him hitting his stride kind of second half of the season like most rookies do. I don't expect him to come out of the gate like a Russell Westbrook who averaged, you know, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists his rookie season, or Chris Paul, 16 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. You know, if you're looking for those stats from D'Angelo Russell, and I don't know why you would, but if you're looking for those kind of stats, you're going to be very disappointed. You know, just to go over like a similar career arc that I think he's going to have, you know, Steve Nash, you know, he only played 10 minutes per game his rookie season, so he only had 3 points and 2 assists. I think a more reasonable year to look at for Steve Nash is his third year with Dallas, when he averaged 30 minutes a game and he had 7.9 points, 5.5 assists, and 2.9 rebounds. So I think Russell's probably going to average between 28 to 30 minutes. So with that said, I think Russell, based off of what he's shown this preseason in terms of him still trying to figure out how to run the offense as well as get his own offense, I think he's going to average around pretty much Jeremy Lin numbers from last year, like 11 points, 4 rebounds, 5 to 6 assists. What do you have?
So for Russell, I mean, you talk about Steve Nash. I'm thinking more along the lines of like a James Harden. I know James Harden came off the bench when he was a rookie. He came off the bench in every game. He only played about 23 minutes a game. I would project his scoring up a little bit more, because I think Russell is a little bit... Russell's not playing with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, and I think he's also a little bit farther along as a shooter right now than Harden was when he first entered the league. So I think Russell is going to average probably about 12 to 14 points, but I think he's going to average very few assists. I would be shocked if he averaged 5+ assists, just because of the way our team works. Our offense is super clunky from what we've seen, and we have him playing with like three extremely ball dominant guys in Randall, Clarkson, and Kobe, who all want the ball in their hands to sort of create. So I would be shocked if Russell ended up with 5. I think 3, and I know that, like, that might be a shocking number for people for a starting point guard, but I just don't see how he's going to do more than that given the opportunities I expect him to have.
Yeah, and I can see that in terms of, you know, I think he's been tentative with it, and then also he's playing out there with Clarkson and Kobe. I guess I'm hoping that also Byron Scott kind of staggers the lineup a little more and allows him to play with the bench unit. I'm expecting him to have very low assist numbers at the first half, and then kind of hitting his stride again with the playmaking as well in the second half. So we'll see. So I could definitely see 3
That's
assists
true.
As well.
That's true, yeah.
As the low end. So yeah, you know, in recap, we have Russell combining both of our predictions. We have him at around 11 to 14 points, kind of 4 rebounds, right? 4 rebounds is pretty good.
Yeah,
he's been a
yeah.
pretty good, solid rebounder. And then anywhere from 3 to 5 assists should be a pretty good baseline for him. How do you think his shooting percentage is going to look like this year?
I think he's going to shoot probably like 40% overall.
Yeah.
And probably around like mid-30s from 3.
Yeah.
I think
I'm hoping he hits those marks.
Yeah, that's, to me, that's pretty much the standard marks for everyone who's ended up becoming like a very solid offensive player. Kevin Durant, like, obviously, if anyone knew about Kevin Durant when he was at Texas, just put up insane numbers at Texas. And when he came into the NBA his first year, he had a very good year for a rookie, but I think he shot like 39% from the field or something. You know, Russell Westbrook, I think, shot about 39-40%. Mm-hmm. Harden shot 40% as a rookie. So, you know, it's a completely different game, and I'm expecting Russell to have low shooting percentages, but that shouldn't be what we'll come to expect from him in the future. He's going to get much more efficient as he gets more experience.
Yeah, so don't be shocked by some scary numbers from Russell this season. It's all about how he looks and taking things piece by piece with Russell. So that's the starting lineup. Let's kind of go into just a few guys off the bench that I think will play an important role. Obviously, Lou Williams. You know, I don't think his stats are going to differ too much from his Sixth Man of the Year campaign from Toronto, because that dude just puts up numbers in a really short amount of time. And you see it because he gets to the free throw line a lot, so he doesn't need all those minutes. So I expect him to still get, you know, 14 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, kind of his standard Lou Will six man special kind of. What do you have?
So I think that the rebounds about 2, if you look at his stats, he's averaged about 2 every game for his entire career, or 2 every season for his
right.
entire career. So I'd say 2 is pretty fair for that. I'm actually going to go back a year or two for Lou and look at his stats with Atlanta, because I think that's going to be a more accurate representation of what I expect him to do here. He's about a career 40-41% shooter. So I think all that stuff's going to stay the same. He's about a 34-35% three-point shooter. That's all going to stay the same. I think he's going to average about 12 points as opposed to 15 or 16, whatever he put up last year, only because he's playing with Swaggy P, and although he's so aggressive, he is not going to get the same opportunities.
Right, right. So Lou Will, 12 to 14 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists is what you should probably expect from him. Quickly, one other guy, Huertas. I think Huertas is going to be, I don't think we both had him playing more than like, 10 minutes, but now based on what he's shown, I think he's going to find a way to pretty much play 15 to 20 minutes somehow between the point guard and shooting guard position. So I kind of have him averaging pretty much Steve Blake numbers, you know, 7 points, 4.5 assists. And I only say this because I know who Byron Scott is at this point, and, you know, I hope he gives most of the developmental minutes to Russell, but I could see a situation where Huertas is his new Ronnie Price, and he kind of Jeremy Lin's D'Angelo a bit in favor of bringing him along slowly. I eventually expect Russell to be playing 30, 35 minutes by the end of the season when we're probably out of it, but at least to start with, I think Huertas is going to play a lot of minutes. Yeah, I have him at 7 points, 4.5 assists. How do you have Huertas?
So Huertas, I never really saw. For me, it's not like he was going to get very little minutes and now he's going to get 17 minutes. I always thought he was going to get like 5 or like, you know, garbage, not garbage minutes, but just like random filler minutes here and there. and now he might get like 10. But, you know, he's so flashy that in that short amount of time, he could put up a good amount of assists. And he's shown that little floater, you know, so he can put up maybe, I think, like 3 assists, 3 points or something. If you know, I just, it's hard for me to project because I don't think he's going to play that much. And if he does, I sort of have a problem with that because I'm about sacrificing wins right now to develop D'Angelo. And
for sure,
I don't want to see Huertas out there just because he's better.
Yeah. And I'm totally with you on that. You know, I hope Byron doesn't Byron things up in terms of, you know, giving Huertas even the starting job, but not even just the starting job, but giving him like 25 minutes or something. But that's kind of where my projection was going, where I think we're going to have a push and pull between Byron throughout the season. So I'm hoping that, you know, your kind of analysis of this is right. But if Byron does his Byron kind of thing, you know, 7 points, 4.5 assists, not out of the question if this guy ends up getting 15 to 20 minutes like he has been in the preseason. Yeah, but, you know, I'm hoping it's the case with your analysis. That's the case. Do you have any other guys that you kind of did projections for that you want to bring up?
No, I mean, it's for the rest of the lineup, it's just so hard to tell at this point who's going to play and who's not going to play. We just have to wait and see.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that kind of concludes, you know, our projections for this season in terms of stats-wise for the team. I think the most important part is hopefully everything flows well in terms of offensively, and, you know, hopefully these stats not only look good on paper but also on the floor, which is, I think, what we're hoping for this season. You know, so with that said, I think that wraps up our Back to the Future thing. Who knows, you know, who knows how well any of this project out, but in connection with the day, hopefully we're pretty on point. And if we're on point, then, you know, it's probably because we have a time machine and we went to the future and, you know,
right,
already saw all this stuff happening. So yeah, with that said, let's wrap it up.
If you work as hard as you say you're going to work, then there is no limit to how good you can be.
Man, I really appreciate that. And those are strong words that I'm definitely going to take into consideration.
All right, so that was our, you know, projections into the future in terms of what we think the Lakers will do statistically this season. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Obviously, we also did the preseason recap. You know, we're kind of trying to get back into the flow of things, so we apologize if also you have here any technical difficulties. We kind of encountered a lot of that tonight. So not only are we trying to get back into the swing of things after a couple of days off, but for some reason tonight, just all the technical glitches and whatnot just came at us in full force. So I don't know. Maybe it's the whole Upshaw thing. It's just ruining our entire night. So, you know, hopefully bear with us. And, you know, we hope to get another episode out for the weekend before the actual season starts. So, you know, with that said, look us up on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. You know, and also, you know, download us on iTunes and leave us a review because, you know, we're not sure exactly how many viewers we're getting or how many listeners we're getting. We have no idea because iTunes doesn't give us those stats. So, you know, the best way you can tell us, let us know that we're doing a good job or that we're giving you guys content that you want to hear is by giving us a review or rating us on iTunes. So, yeah, Tommy, you want to say goodbye to people? I don't know.
Bye.
All right, there you go. Tommy said bye, and with that, we are saying goodbye for real. All right, peace.
Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them.
go.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.